It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
Week three of the college football season is finally here. I've been waiting all week long, and I know you have too, so we're going to get right after it today. What we're going to do today, we're going to talk to the angel of the big house, because Air Force is up there to play Michigan. We'll be talking to her in just a second. Then we'll be traveling to Florida to talk to Josh Ward with WNML out of Knoxville, as they're down there to take on the Florida Gators. And we'll also talk to Mark Moses. He's a Florida guy. He's in Melbourne, Florida. He'll be in Gainesville later today. And then we're going to Louisville. Eric Boynton, he's talked to us a few times about the Clemson Tigers, and he's going to join us again today. And we'll also be talking to Jake Lorem from Louisville. Louisville's got a big test tonight against Clemson, so we'll check in on that game. And then, of course, it's Fish's Picks. And this week, I've got you a special guest picker. You've heard him on 740 KVOR, our sister station, all the time, but he's joining us today to hang up the politics and talk a little college football. That's all coming up here on the University of Fish, but we're going to start right now. Air Force going to the big house to take on the Michigan Wolverines this weekend. They have a stiff test up ahead because Michigan, we saw what they did against the Florida defense, backed up a little bit against Cincinnati, but Michigan has one of the quickest defenses I have seen in the Big Ten in years. It looks like an SEC defense. We're talking with the angel of the big house. She is now a grad assistant. She was a student. She's a grad assistant now, working her way to an adjunct professorship here on the University of Fish. Angelique Shengelis, how you doing today?
I think I'm getting paid like one, too. They don't make very much money, do they?
No. My budget is very, very small here at the university. But Big House today, Air Force in Michigan. What's it going to be like there at the Big House when it's not going to be an air raid from the Air Force because they don't throw the ball a whole lot? But are they ready for the option?
I think so. I mean, Don Brown, Michigan's defensive coordinator, looked really, like, uptight about it in mid-April. I mean, they were in spring practice, and he was already talking about, I'm going to go to Italy on the flight over, I'm going to be watching Air Force film, and we're going to practice for Air Force. And I thought he was joking, but I saw him that day that they had arrived in Rome. I said, he was sitting with his wife. I said, did he really watch Air Force film? And he's like, yeah, I did. And then they practiced those three practices in Rome. It wasn't exclusively about Air Force, but they spent time practicing for Air Force, and they did it one other time before they left Ann Arbor. So it started from the spring, and they built on that, obviously, in this week. And, you know, when I talked to Chase Winovich, one of their starting defensive linemen, back in April, he said that they feel like they're going to know Air Force's offense better than Air Force knows it. So that's a pretty bold statement, but I think they feel like they've got a good handle.
So when you talked to Winovich this week, did he say anything about the hair?
He didn't talk to us this week. Maurice Hurst said that he's decided that Chase should be banned from media because he talks too much. But I did see Chase in the building yesterday, and I'm like, hey, nice hair. And he said to keep watching his Twitter account because he's going to have some big news, and I haven't seen it yet. So, it's blonde. I mean, I think he kind of did the Jake Ryan thing from a few years ago with the long hair and now very blonde. So it fits him. He's a crazy guy, and it's kind of perfectly suited for him.
Well, Winovich is going to have a big game shutting down that option. Mm-hmm. But when Michigan is on offense, we haven't seen the offense really open up this year. Was kind of a, you know, they did put up some points against Florida, but mm-hmm. Wilton Spate has to go downfield. It's almost a T.J. Barrett thing where he's not going downfield enough, but I think Spate has more ability to go downfield.
He does. And, you know, really, you look at it, Michigan's defense has scored touchdowns for them. I mean, three of them. I mean, they've scored more than they've allowed this year. So they've gotten a boost from the defense. But, yeah, I mean, I think part of the problem with Wilton, when you watch the games in person, you see that he doesn't have a lot of open options. And I think part of that is still a young team figuring things out, getting the running the right routes. and the right side of that offense is young. It's inexperienced with Michael Owenu at right guard and Nolan Elizio at right tackle. I mean, he had a personal foul penalty last week, unsportsmanlike penalty last week. And, you know, I think it's just growing pains and figuring it out. And I think Wilton, it's not a I don't want to say it's a trust issue, but I think he's trying to feel out, you know, what are they doing? You know, what are they capable of doing? And that affects how he's playing. So I think they're working with him on A, footwork. I mean, that was affected last week. And B, getting comfortable with these guys. And it took him, I'd say, a good third of the season last year to start feeling really comfortable on timing with and chemistry with Jehu Chessin and Amara Darbo and Jake Butt. So I'm not surprised it's taking him time. I just don't think Michigan fans have that kind of patience. They want him to be good right now.
Do you think any of it could be that he's kind of looking over his shoulder because he's got Jamie O'Korn back there? And, you know, this in preseason is like, okay, who's going to be starting? It has been Spate so far through the first two games. Is he kind of timid because of O'Korn?
I don't think so. I mean, I think Carbaugh's made it pretty clear that he's the guy. And, yes, he sat for a couple series in that opener against Florida, and O'Korn came in. But, you know, O'Korn didn't come in last week until the very end. So I don't think it's that. I think it's a matter of just feeling comfortable with these guys and rushing a little bit and not setting his feet. And you know, he says it clearly has had issues. I mean, and it's led to a very uneven performance by the offense over these first two games. But there have been some highlights, and he's been part of some of those highlights too. So it's there. And that's what the coaches keep saying. Drevno, the offensive coordinator, said it this week. That it's there. It's just a matter of getting it all clicking. And sometimes that takes time. And Harbaugh was saying last Saturday, he wasn't saying, hey, fans, have patience with us. He's saying he has patience with them because he understands that they're still learning and they're still pretty young guys.
And we're talking with Angelique Shengelis from the Big House. She is the angel of the Big House, and in just a couple hours, you can hear that game on our sister station, 740 KVOR, pregame starting at 10, pregame starting right as soon as this show's over with kickoff at 10 a.m. So, Angel, thanks for joining us again. Look forward to talking to you later on through the season.
I look forward to it. As always, I got to move up the ranks, you know. I've got to earn that tenure.
You're getting close to being tenured. I think next appearance you become an adjunct.
That's something to shoot for.
Angel, thanks for joining us today. We're going to take a quick break here on University of Fish, but when we get back, we are going to Florida. That's right, Florida, Tennessee, coming up on the backside here on the University of Fish on Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
One of the biggest matchups in the SEC, actually the biggest matchup this week in the SEC, is the traditional Tennessee versus Florida. Florida had been ravaged by Hurricane Irma, but they're still playing this game in Gainesville. It might take the Volunteer Navy to get down there, but we're talking with Josh Ward from WNML from Knoxville. Josh, how you doing today?
Hey, doing well. Good to be with you.
Now, we've seen Tennessee through a couple games. The Georgia Tech game going to overtime. The offense looked a little slow at times. Defense had a hard time picking up on the option. What does Tennessee have to do this week against the Florida Gators, who won, obviously, showed nothing on offense against the Michigan Wolverines? But what does Tennessee have to do this week?
I think it starts with Tennessee trying to stop the run, which is kind of funny because Florida is trying to get its running game going for the first time in a while, not just the opener, but Florida really struggled to run the football last year, and it's now seven straight games since Florida rushed for a touchdown. So Tennessee's defense, if it's going to get right with stopping the run, it should be this week. If not, then Tennessee's going to have problems all week long. But I would also say getting after the quarterback, because this has a chance to be a low-scoring game. And if that's the case, you look for your defense or special teams to try to make plays. So if Tennessee's defense, if the guys up front can get after the quarterback, can disrupt what Felipe Franks is doing at quarterback and make some plays, that could be the difference maker in the game. So stopping the run is a priority for sure, but getting after the quarterback and trying to cause him to make mistakes will be something that Tennessee is focusing on Saturday.
Well, Felipe Franks is playing for the first time in front of his home crowd there in Gainesville, and they'll be fired up, especially with the week that the state's endured. But for an SEC team to come in, it's his SEC opener. We're talking a true freshman in Felipe Franks. What does Tennessee have to do on defense? I mean, because we saw what happened with Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech just ran the ball at will. We've already talked about that, about how the defense has to step up. But Tennessee on offense, what have they got to do against this Florida defense that didn't give up a whole lot of points against Michigan, who have looked kind of pedestrian on offense, actually. But what does Tennessee have to do on offense to right the ship and to score some points against this Gator defense?
Tennessee's best offensive player, in my opinion, is John Kelly, the starting running back. He's a junior. He played a good amount last year and was productive. He was a difference maker against Georgia Tech, and he's the guy that I think the offense leans on the most. And if John Kelly can be effective running the football, then that could take some pressure off Quentin Dormady at quarterback. Now, can Tennessee's offensive line create holes and get a push up front? That's a question that I have, but I think John Kelly, as well as the guys behind him, I would give Ty Chandler an opportunity. He's a true freshman running back, but he could be a game breaker that, if he finds some space, could really make a big play for Tennessee's offense. He had a kickoff return for a touchdown last week against Indiana State. So Ty Chandler is a guy that I would try to get the football to a few times, but it's really that offensive backfield, which is led by John Kelly. That's where it starts. And then can a receiver step up and make a play? Marquez Callaway is a sophomore that's done that a few times for Tennessee this year. They'll hope that he can do that, and then hope that Quentin Dormady, making his first ever road start for Tennessee, eliminates mistakes, takes care of the football, and then at times when he's asked to make a big throw that he's able to step up and do that.
Well, Josh Ward with WNML out of Knoxville, enjoyed our time with you today. Look forward to talking to you later in the season as the SEC season really ramps up. Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
A lot of fun. Thank you.
We are joined now from Central Florida, hit hard by Hurricane Irma, but we know that hurricanes bring people together. Not only does hurricanes bring people together, college sports does as well, and we're talking college sports today. We're joined now from Melbourne, Florida, with Mark Moses. Mark, how you getting through, brother?
Hey, man, it's good to hear from you. It's been a rough couple weeks. It feels like Labor Day was 10 months ago. That's what it feels like, even though it was about 2 weeks ago. And it's one of those things where, you know, I grew up in Chicago in the Midwest, and you go through snowstorms and tornadoes. I've even been through an earthquake. This is my second hurricane in about 13 months, and this is very key. It's a three-step process. First, you get word of it, which takes a couple days of preparing to drive you crazy. Then you go through the actual storm. Then what's going on right now is the third phase, the pickup afterwise, because right now we are in one of these things where there's a lot of damage, there's a lot of power outages. There's a lot of people don't have any, you know, how do I put this, Tim? There's not a lot of clean food right there. A lot of stuff's spoiled. So you're trying to make sure all the food is clean. Make sure people have water. They have electricity. It's been tough, man. And college football has kind of been the back burner. But luckily, we will have some games this weekend.
We do have some games this weekend. And one of the biggest, of course, is an annual matchup of Florida and Tennessee. The Gators, who have only got one game under their belt because of the storm this last week. And we look back at the Michigan game. The offense didn't show a lot. Felipe Franks, not sure what we have there. We've got the transfer from Notre Dame. Who's going to be starting this week for Coach Jim McElwain?
Okay, here's the two main points for that. It will be Felipe Franks, the freshman. He will get another crack at it. Now, here's the other one. Doug Nussmeier, the offensive coordinator, he's going to be in the booth this week. In the opener, he was on the sideline. They decided they're going to put him up there. Maybe he can get a better view for the field. I don't know, but they're going with that, and you're absolutely right. This team has been off since Saturday before Labor Day, and you got to give credit to Michigan because they exposed the Florida Gators, where the Gators' offense has not improved, and especially that offensive line has not improved. So that's what you're going to go with for Saturday. It's a huge rivalry game here in the South. Tennessee won last year. But, yeah, Felipe Franks is your starter. Doug Nussmeier, offensive coordinator, who's under a lot of heat right now, he's going to be in the booth, Tim.
Well, you've got a defense that's outscoring your offense at Florida right now. So when you face that Volunteer offense, what's that defense got to do this week?
Yeah, it's a great point, and it's nothing new, honestly. You know, people still think Steve Spurrier is the coach here. No, it's been a long time now since the Gators' offense has just shown up and been a dominant, high-scoring attack. The defense is littered with more first-round talent all over the place, and you're right. Guys like Duke Dawson in that secondary, they're the ones who are the best chance for this team to score points right now for this defense. Look, they're going to be nasty. They were getting to Michigan, all right? They were in that football game, but it might be another season where the Gators' defense might be their best chance of scoring.
Well, you look at that defense, and you look at the offense and the inefficiency that they had against Michigan this past 2 weeks ago. I want to say this past week, but it's been 2 weeks since they played. And you have a Florida quarterback that finally threw for more than 320 yards, but it happened in West Virginia with Will Grier. So what has Felipe Franks got to do against this Volunteer defense?
You know, you had to bring it up, huh? You had to bring up Will Grier to drive me crazy. Don't forget, okay, this is very key. He was a Will Muschamp recruit. You look at Jim McElwain, he never recruited him, and then he got suspended 2 years ago, and then now you're right, he's with West Virginia, and he looks fantastic. But you know what? That's in the past. You got to look at Felipe Franks right now, Tim, and look, it's going to be his second career start, and I don't think, you know, you had to take on Michigan, top 10 defense, and now you got to take on Tennessee in your SEC opener. Man, this is the expectations are high for this Franks kid, but it's going to be up to his offensive line. I can't stress this enough. If they cannot get a push up front, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is for the Gators. They've got to get a push so that those running lanes can open up. It's not just about the quarterback, all right? It's got to be the offensive line. And here's the other thing. Your number one receiver, Antonio Callaway, is not going to play it unless something changes in the next couple of hours here. And Jordan Scarlett, your best running back, will be out as well. So it's going to be these other guys to step up and help. I mean, seriously, help that quarterback position with Felipe Franks. We're going to have to see on Saturday. I mean, the freshman's going to have to make plays with his feet. He's going to step up and play better than he did against Michigan.
I now hope he does. For the Gator fans, I hope he does, because I know they've went through a whole lot this past week with Hurricane Irma coming through. Mark Moses from Central Florida, from Melbourne, and luckily you have power. I know your station hasn't had power, so thank you for joining us when you couldn't even be on your own air. Thank you, Mark Moses.
Yeah, man, anytime, and keep up the good work.
And we'll be right back here on the University of Fish to talk about the biggest game of the week. Of course, that's got to be Clemson and Louisville right here on Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Now, the biggest game of the week has got to be Clemson-Louisville. We're going straight to Louisville, being joined by Jake Lorem, the Louisville Courier-Journal. And Jake, mama, that man is doing it again. Lamar Jackson looks just as good, if not better, than last year. What have you seen from him so far this year?
Yeah, I think he is better, actually. I mean, I think people wondered all offseason, it felt like, what can we expect from this guy after he had such an amazing year last year? Can he get better? Can he find a way to improve on what he did wrong? And I think he has. I think he's maybe a little bit more comfortable as a leader, intangibly and tangibly. I think he's a better, probably had more growth to make in the passing game. He's a better passer. I think his arm's a little stronger. He's added muscle, added weight. I think he's more accurate, and mostly I think he's making, he just sees that as a bigger part of his game now. He's making throws I think that he wouldn't have made a year ago, stepping up in the pocket and throwing downfield when maybe in the past he would have just tucked in and run, and that's something that his teammates and coaches have kind of confirmed for us too.
Now, you see the stats, and you see that he's accounting for 85 to 90% of all the team's offense, but that's not an entirely true fact, because the people are catching the ball, too, when he's throwing it. Talk about those receivers he has this year.
Yeah, he's got some playmakers around him. I mean, maybe people discount that because they lost a lot of talent from last year's, especially receiving core. They lost James Quick, Tamari Staples, and the tight end Cole Hikutini. So they lost a lot of guys, and so people wondered, can he do the same thing without the same weapons around him? And the answer is clearly yes. Jalen Smith is a big-time receiving threat for them. He was third in the country, if I'm not mistaken, in yards per catch a year ago with 22, and he's on pace to have that kind of year again with more catches. He's an electric threat on the outside, and then we knew they would need to, and they have. Some of the younger guys have stepped in. Des Patrick, 87, is a good target for him, and Seth Dawkins. So I guess it's tough to know. Maybe we'll never know how much of that connection is him making them better and how much of that is them making their own plays. But they certainly have not lost a beat from, you know, losing those receivers from last year.
Now, when you look at the defensive side, Purdue was able to have some offensive success. North Carolina was. If you're a betting man, you've lost on Louisville 2 weeks in a row because they haven't covered the spread either week. But we're not talking right. betting here. We're talking straight-up football. What does a Louisville defense have to do to stop the young quarterback that Clemson has this week?
Yeah, well, I think he's going to bring a little bit of a different dimension. He's a running quarterback. Neither of the two guys that they've faced in the first 2 weeks is really, I would say, a mobile threat. I thought they were actually both really good quarterbacks. I mean, actually, I guess both teams play too. I saw Chaz Surratt from North Carolina and both guys from Purdue, David Blow especially. I thought they were both good quarterbacks. But what does the defense have to do? I think, well, first you have to stop the run. I think, you know, Clemson, Kelly Bryant is a good runner for Clemson. He's physical, man, he's tough. He took that hit against Auburn and left for the rest of the series, but then came right back in. I think you have to stop the run, which is a dimension that they haven't had to do yet. And you also, for one thing, and I'll state the obvious here, it would help if Jair Alexander played for them. They're the second best player on Louisville's team, preseason All-American cornerback. That would certainly help. If he doesn't play, I think they're just going to need to need to play fast and limit the big plays. They gave up way too many big plays last year against Clemson. Deshaun Watson threw 5 touchdown passes. I think they're just going to need to play fundamentally sound football and make sure that a lot of those, you know, mid-level games don't turn into long touchdowns.
Well, Jake Lorem from Louisville, thank you for joining us today. I know we're going to be talking to you again this year because the way Louisville's been playing, they'll be in some big games this year.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Tim. I appreciate it.
Okay, we just talked to Louisville, but there is a team on the other side. We're joined by Eric Boynton now from upstate South Carolina. He'll be in Louisville later today for the game. Now, Eric, we looked at Clemson the past couple weeks. And great defensive showing both games. I mean, very good. But it all starts with the quarterback on offense. You've got yourselves a star there.
They do. It's a guy that's starting, Kelly Bryant, a junior that started off the season well here. And, you know, you don't really learn much that first game against Kent State. The blowout saw him throw a couple of nice deep balls and just look poised, but not much competition. But then to come out last week, 7:30 night game under the lights, 14th ranked Auburn with a very experienced and talented defense. Maybe arguably the best defense Clemson's going to face all year this side of Florida State in a couple of months down the road. But to come out against those guys, he wasn't spectacular, started slow, got knocked from the game for one series, came back in after getting the wind knocked out of him, and that was when he led the only 2 touchdown drives of the game to end the first half and to start the second half. And, threw the ball well. It was kind of a game managing mode. It wasn't anything thrilling, anything exciting, but Clemson went ultra conservative They had 11 sacks on Auburn's quarterback. Their defensive front dominated. And once they saw the defense was in total command of that game, they just went, like I said, ultra-conservative. So just a good, solid performance by the quarterback and a really good, you know, prime-time matchup to kind of get those jitters out, the big stage jitters out. And now he'll try to take his see if his show translates to the road this week.
And they are going on the road. They'll be at Louisville later tonight. And let's talk about that Clemson defense because they've got a test on their hands tonight. Last year, Lamar Jackson, although in a loss, turned out to be a close loss, put 450 yards plus on that Clemson defense. What do they have to do tonight to shut the reigning Heisman Trophy winner down?
Well, with Lamar, I mean, he's so, you know, he does so many things well. And I think a lot of people that don't see him on a regular basis or might catch his highlights or might, you know, just see him in a primetime matchup here or there, they just think this guy is just a spectacular runner because that's generally what you see on him. And he really is a magician with the ball in his hands. But he's got an absolute rocket of an arm. And it's a guy that's a year older, knows the offense better, more poised back there in the pocket. It's not at the first sign of pressure, you know, tuck it and run and let my unbelievable athletic ability take over. This guy is a solid pocket passer when he needs to be. And when you just add the feet in, he's awful tough to stop. So it's just all about Clemson playing a complete game. They've got the best defensive front four in the country and right up there in the top 3 to 5 front sevens in the country with their linebacking core. And you just kind of, you know, you got to play your lanes, play great discipline, have great eyes, as Brent Venables, their coordinator, likes to say. And, you know, the secondary plays a big part in this. You know, you have to fight that urge to see the quarterback scrambling and think, okay, if he gets free, I got to run up and make the tackle. The safety's clogging those lanes. And once guys get behind you, Lamar's got the arm and the accuracy to get the ball downfield. So it's just got to be ultra, ultra disciplined. And, you know, just put the pressure on them. See if they can get a couple of hits on them early, some big hits. Maybe try to, you know, take a little bit of life out of those legs and maybe a little bit of life out of his spirit as well if they can get some big-time shots on him early.
Well, we know that the Clemson defense likes getting sacks, and we saw last year the Louisville offensive line kind of likes giving them up as well because Houston registered 11 sacks on Louisville. So if Clemson can do that again like they did last week against Auburn and Stidham, I think Clemson will be sitting pretty good.
I think you're right. And when you look at Louisville so far, I mean they have their line has struggled once again, and they have a true freshman at right guard, starting at right guard, and a true freshman at center. That's really, if you've watched any of their tape, the true freshman center has really struggled. And you've got basically three first round NFL draft picks in the next coming years among the front four in that line, and maybe a fourth. So unless they just run out of gas now, they did have a part-time starter, a graduate student transfer at the end of last year, and had another kid that would have been probably the sixth guy on the totem pole had a car accident, and he's gone for the year. So there's still been other blue-chip guys behind them, but not as much experience. So, you know, you get worn down pretty quick trying to trace Lamar Jackson around. But, yeah, you're right. And Louisville, just an offensive line, and Lamar Jackson can make an offensive lineman look awfully good with his scrambling skills. But if they're able to just get in there, collapse everything down, and just make life miserable on Lamar Jackson early, that's going to be a key. You just can't let Lamar get confidence, get that Louisville machine rolling, then it could be a long night for Clemson. And like I said, you could really get worn down chasing him around. So it's that really is such a marquee matchup. I mean, what a wonderful week three thing to see the reigning Heisman Trophy winner go against the best defensive line in the country. It's a pretty cool showdown.
Well, Eric Boynton, it's turning into pretty much a weekly feature with you, and we do look forward to talking to you because the way the ACC is looking this year, Clemson's going to have some really big games.
Absolutely. Always enjoy talking football with you, and call me anytime.
Now, when we get back, it's that time again. That's right. Fish's Pick coming up right after this. You're listening to University of Fish on Extra Sports 1300.
Let's take a step out on the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
All right, it's that time of the show again. It's time for Fish's Picks, and this week I had to figure out, okay, who do I want as my guest picker? So what do? I go and get the number one conservative talk show host in America. Well, at least Southern Colorado. We're joined now by Richard Randall, heard Monday through Friday, 8:30 to Rush, every day on 740 KVOR, our sister station. Richard, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing real good. Thanks so much for having me join the university and get my opinions on this. It's kind of a refreshing to be able to talk sports instead of all the politics and all the angst that comes with that.
Well, we know you know your politics. We're about to find out if you know your college football. And we're going to start off with a local team for you, trying to make it easy for you. The Air Force Falcons traveling to Ann Arbor just in a couple hours. Pregame starts 8 a.m. on our sister station, 740 KVOR. They're taking on Michigan in the Big House. Falcons, Wolverines, how do you see it?
First of all, I have to say that I think the Wolverines have some of the coolest helmets in college football, and that carries some weight with me. Michigan, though, is young, but it's still bigger and faster, more talented across the board. I'd love to see the Falcons go in there and pull something out, but I just don't see it happening. And even with the spread, I don't see that happening. Michigan held Florida to just 11 yards rushing for the game 2 weeks ago, so I've got to go with Michigan on this one. How about you?
Michigan has, their defense has outscored the offenses that they've played against.
Oh my gosh.
The Michigan defense has put up 21 points this year, and they haven't had 21 points scored on them offensively. They did give up 14 against Florida, but that was two pick sixes that Wilton Spate threw. I don't think that the Air Force defensive backfield will be able to do the same thing that the Florida did, because Florida is much faster, has much better athletes than the Air Force Academy. No slight to our cadets, because God bless them. Thank you for your service. Thank you for everything you're going to do throughout your life, but the athletic talent is not there. 23 points, not enough. Take the Wolverines, make you some money. And I just want to remind everybody, this is only for entertainment purposes only. Do not come yelling at me when your wife's mad at you because you're losing money on my picks. I got to deal with mine as it is.
I don't do much of that. In fact, I don't do any of that. You know, there used to be a time, Tim, when having, you know, a different offense really helped the cadets in the Air Force Academy when they'd go play some of these games. The Falcons run out of a different wishbone formation, and, you know, the other teams would have a hard time preparing for that. But I think when you're in a house that big, it's that noisy, they're that pumped up, I got to go with you on this one.
It's going to be 110,000 people there in a couple hours, which is about four times what Falcon Stadium holds. Next, we go to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The Oklahoma State Cowboys, who've looked great on offense through 2 weeks, playing nobody, now have to take on an ACC opponent in the Pitt Panthers, who just lost to Penn State last week. How do you see this one?
Well, I get a little bit of help from my son. I have to acknowledge that, because I spend so much time on politics and culture and that sort of thing. I don't have a lot of downtime for sports. In fact, I just found out that the Rockies had lost two in a row. But Oklahoma State, their offense is led by quarterback Mason Rudolph. And according to my notes, he threw for over 500 yards against Pitt last year. That ought to be enough for them to pull it out. What do you say?
11.5 points, that's going to be a lot, especially with the way that Pitt played defense last week against Penn State, because I think Penn State's offense with Saquon Barkley and Trace McSorley has got to be just as talented as Mason Rudolph and James Washington. So I am going to take Pitt with 11.5 points. It could be because I don't like Oklahoma State. That could be it, but I don't think they're going to keep it. I think Pitt's going to keep it close enough that the 11.5 points will come into play. Now,
oh, my gosh, I have to do a shout-out to Matt Smith. He's a freshman at Oklahoma State, and Ann Boswell, my former producer and call screeners from Oklahoma State. So I've got a little bit of affinity for them. Plus, I used to be a Nebraska fan, so I'm not all that hepped up about the Sooners as you are. We disagree on that. That's probably one of the few things when it comes to anything. We always agree on politics generally. Football, okay, a little bit different. What do you have for the next game?
Well, next, speaking of Nebraska, they just come off the loss against Oregon last week. Offense finally came around the second half, but it wasn't enough to beat the Ducks. They're giving up 13 points. The Northern Illinois coming in, it's not the same Northern Illinois you saw 4 or 5 years ago when they made the Orange Bowl, but it's still a game Northern Illinois team. Northern Illinois or your beloved Huskers?
You know, I've got to go with the Huskers, and here's part of the reason. They're at home, and they struggled. I mean, it's so embarrassing. Everybody was so jazzed that we were going to have an experienced, maybe NFL quarterback there, and things were going to be so good. But they didn't look good in their opener, and obviously last week was horrible. Lee can't throw picks at the rate he has been. It's as simple as that. I think they can do it. I do have a fondness, I have to say. I lived in Chicago. My girlfriend went to Northern Illinois University. I used to go to Huskies games up there. Who was the coach that they had. There's an announcer who was a coach up there maybe 10 years ago. I can't for the life of me remember him. But, you know, they've had some good years and some good teams up there, but they're going to a big house as well. Nebraska is not an easy place to play, so I'm going with Nebraska. How about you?
I've got to go with Nebraska as well. Playing in Memorial Stadium in front of those rabid crowds, even though the black shirts have kind of been playing like pink shirts this year.
Oh, gosh, yes.
But I think that 13 points is enough. Take the Huskers at home. A little more local kind of flavor here. Colorado State going to Tuscaloosa to take on the number one team in the nation, the Alabama Crimson Tide. Alabama giving up 28.5 points to the CSU Rams. How do you see this one?
You know what? I love the in-state teams. There was only a period of time when Barnett and all the rape scandals and Katie Knight up there at Boulder that I really had an anti-Colorado, University of Colorado attitude. But I've always loved CSU and the new stadium and everything. You know, there's a good mojo going on there. But it's Alabama. I mean, they're on a completely different level than CSU. The defensive front for Alabama is going to overpower the Rams line. I think it's going to be ugly, and I've got to take Alabama. And it being on the road on top of it. But I wouldn't change much if it were up there at the new stadium in Fort Collins either. How about you?
Well, the 28.5 points, that's going to get covered in the first half. Alabama is going to walk away with this game. It's going to be a 56-0. It's going to be embarrassing for Coach Mike Bobo and the Rams. They're going to come back to that new stadium with their tail between their legs. Now, we're staying kind of in the SEC. LSU at Mississippi State. Mississippi State, the Bulldogs in Stark Vegas, getting 7.5 against the LSU Tigers.
LSU should get enough from their running back, which is Darius Geis, to win in what should be, I think, a really, really physical game. The return of the pass rush, Arden Key, a probable first-round pick next year, that's a key as well. I've got to go with LSU, and one of my best friends, Marvin Siebert, up there in Alaska, would absolutely yell at me if I picked anybody other than the Tigers. I go with LSU. And you?
Well, Marvin from Alaska might get mad at me because I think in Stark Vegas with 7.5 points, LSU, yes, they put on a defensive show when they played BYU. This is not the BYU offense they're going up against. Mississippi State will put enough points on the board to keep it close. Take Mississippi State, getting the 7.5. Now we got to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to finish up Fish's Picks with Richard Randall right here on the University of Fish. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Welcome back. We're in the middle of Fish's Picks right now. We're being joined by Richard Randall, heard every Monday through Friday right on our sister station, 740 KVOR. Now, this next game is another nod to you because I know for some godforsaken reason you like the Texas Longhorns. They are traveling to L.A. to take on USC. They have not played a game in L.A. since 2005 when Texas beat USC. It was Vince Young, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Lindale White, all those great players in the national championship game. Vince Young runs it in for the touchdown near the end of the game. The Longhorns win their first national championship in like 50 years. But now they're not the same Texas. You don't have Vince Young at quarterback. You got a Shane Buechele at quarterback, and they're getting 15.5 points. The Longhorns, I'm giving you a gift, 15.5 points. How do you like him against Clay Helton's Trojans?
You know what? I love Hook'em Horns, and I wanted my son to play baseball down there. I love everything about Texas. I love their attitude, their politics. I love the hurricane response. There's really little to dislike about Texas, except that University of Texas is in Austin. Look, it's a rematch of the 2006 Rose Bowl, and I'm going to have to remember those memories of Vince Young because it's going to be bad. You got Sam Darnold leading USC in a good defeat of a very good Stanford team. I'm an online student there. I think we can expect more of the same with them at home against Texas. In Texas, you know, watching them last week, I mean, they make a good play, they make a big play, and then they turn right around and give up a big play. And you just can't do that, you know, I don't care how good Maryland's helmets look. They should have been able to handle a team like that, and they weren't able to.
USC is going to walk all over Tom Herman and the Texas Longhorns later today in the L.A. Coliseum. There's been some great Olympics there, and it's going to look like Olympic sprinters running down the field, catching passes from Sam Darnold. And so you take the USC Trojans, giving up the 15.5. Now, this game, This game I also threw in for you. We have the sexual assaulters versus the gang rapers. Of course, that's going to be Baylor at Duke. Yes, you got the Baptist up against the Jesuits of Duke. Duke giving up 14.5. Duke is a 14.5 point favorite to a Big 12, used to be power, coming in there to Durham. How do you see this one?
You know what? I love Duke, and I only love them because my kids love them for basketball, and then that converted to maybe wanting to go to school down there. So I've grown accustomed to Duke, and you know what? I used to have a fondness for all of the Texas teams, but how in the world can you, you know, they got rid of some of the bad apples down there, but that is a horrible culture at Baylor. And I know that shouldn't affect my picks, Tim, at all, but it does. I want teams to beat the hell out of Baylor until they learn their lesson. They've got a new head coach down there, off to an 0-2 start with the Bears, losses to University of Texas San Antonio and to Liberty. I didn't even know Liberty had a football team, for Pete's sakes. No, I'm taking Duke in this one. I'd like to know what you're thinking.
Well, when you lose to the Fighting Jerry Falwells and then you lose to UTSA, Liberty is not even in a conference. They're not even in an FCS conference. And then you have UTSA getting their first win over a Power 5 school. How can you take Baylor? I don't care how many points Duke is giving up. You cannot take Baylor in this one when they've lost to two FCS schools. And usually you look at Baylor's out-of-conference schedule and it's like it's Cupcake City. And you would look at it this year, and it should be, but it's not. And Duke, who had a great game last week against Northwestern, another one of your Chicago schools, but Duke went up there and beat Northwestern. Duke is going to beat Baylor at home by more than the two touchdowns. Take the Blue Devils, and give up the points. We have the Tulane Green Wave. Great law school. Great law school there at Tulane. They're traveling to Norman, Oklahoma to take on the number two team in the nation, the Oklahoma Sooners, coming off that big win at Ohio State. But here's the thing. Oklahoma giving up 35.5 points. Is that too many points to take the Sooners?
You know what? That's a ton of points. I mean, it's almost prohibitive. There's a big side of me that would want to take Tulane, and you have a name like the Green Wave. I mean, how do you get excited about that? I've never been an Oklahoma fan. You know that when I wear my Texas jersey in and you made me sing Oklahoma Boomer Sooner for Pete's sakes, it's embarrassing. But look, Oklahoma is going to absolutely dominate that. There's just no question about that. They dominated Ohio State in the second half last week. Tulane's line has been one of the worst in the country the last couple of years. The only good news is this. At least if Baker Mayfield won't get criticized if he plants a flag this week, right?
No, he won't. And to be doing it on natural grass, if the flag will actually sink into the ground.
Exactly.
So I've got to make this real quick, real easy. Oklahoma. I mean, giving up 35.5, I'll take that all day long. You can make it 42, and I would take Oklahoma, especially the way they're clicking on offense, the diversity of the passing game, and Trey Sermon, the freshman, coming on in the running game. You got to take Oklahoma. Now we actually have two games that are a little bit tougher to pick. I mean, the rest of these games have been Cupcake City, been bad matchups, but now we've got two good games. Tennessee going to Hurricane Irma ravaged Florida. We just talked to Mark Moses from there in Melbourne, Florida, who has been broadcasting by Skype because the studio had no power. So you got the Florida Gators giving up 4.5 to the Tennessee Volunteers. How do you see this one?
Richard Randall says that Tennessee beats Florida. It'll be a really, really close game. Tennessee's had some injury issues, only one sack in two games. That's not good. But look, Florida, God bless them. And I love Tim Tebow, make no mistake. So that gives me a fondness for Florida. But they have been disrupted by the hurricane in the last couple of weeks. They even had to cancel a game against Northern Colorado. And I'm wondering more than anything, what the heck is Northern Colorado? I mean, they used to be Division II. They won national championships. And they're playing against teams like Florida. The Bears were lucky that that was canceled. No, I take Tennessee. I'll take the Vols over the Gators in this one. Close game, though.
The reason Northern Colorado is playing a team like Florida is for the paycheck. That's why these smaller schools play that, and that's why the SEC says, okay, yeah, we'll schedule you Southeast Alabama School of the Deaf, Dumb, and Blind, because that's usually what SEC teams are playing outside of the SEC. But Tennessee, that first game against Georgia Tech, had no offense to speak of the first three quarters. Finally came on. The Florida offense looked anemic against that fast Michigan defense. Tennessee does have some fast players on defense. I think that's going to give the freshman Felipe Franks fits in the offensive backfield. Take the Volunteers. Take your 4.5 points. The Volunteers will win straight up, but take your 4.5 to make sure you've got that pad. Now, this is the biggest game of the week. This would have been played this afternoon, but with the cancellation, or excuse me, the postponement of Florida State, Miami, Clemson at Louisville goes to primetime. This is the biggest game of the week. Clemson giving up 3 points at Louisville. They're giving up points at someone else's house. How do you see this?
Look, we know it's the marquee game of the week, and I've never been a fan of Louisville, Louisville, whatever you want to call it. Not in basketball, not in football. If they have a baseball team, I don't like that either. I don't even know why, but Clemson, I mean, just the whole team. I mean, they've got a defensive front that gives them the edge. They've recorded 11 sacks against Auburn last week. They've got Kelly Bryant. He's replacing Deshaun Watson at quarterback for the defending champion Tigers, who only scored twice last week. Despite that, they look fantastic on the defensive side of the ball. I think Louisville quarterback Lamar Jackson is still the most explosive man in the country. Whether he's a Heisman winner again or not, we'll find out. But a lack of big-time players surrounding him and the pressure from Clemson's front line should force him to make plays on the run, giving Clemson secondary chances for game-altering interceptions. Most of that came from my son, just so you know.
So you're taking Clemson, I'm gathering.
I'm taking Clemson, yes.
Okay, first off, I got to say hats off to Jason Randall. He has given you some great notes because I know none of this, you know. This is all no. coming from your kid. Now, I'll tell you right now why Louisville is going to win this game straight up. So take the points, take Louisville. Last year, Lamar Jackson put up over 450 yards against this same Clemson defense. Actually, it's not the same Clemson defense because there's three NFL draft picks gone from the Clemson defense, and that game was at Death Valley there in Clemson, South Carolina. They lost by 8. They got into a 28-7 hole, and then Lamar Jackson put up the show for the ages with 450 yards combined total offense, 300 in the air, over 150 on the ground. He is playing at home. He's a better passer this year. He's bigger. He's faster, and I don't think the Clemson defense is good as it was last year because all they played is Kent State. Kent State's horrible. They're like one of the bottom 10 teams in the nation. And then they played Auburn. Everybody's going, oh, they played a good Auburn team. If you look at the Auburn offense last year in the Sugar Bowl against Oklahoma, Oklahoma's defense last year was horrid. The defense was, as Charles Barkley would say, it was terrible. Terrible. I'm telling you, terrible.
And I'm actually hearing this coming out of your mouth. You're dogging your team's defense last year?
Yes, I am. I mean, they gave up over 800 yards to Texas Tech. The defense was horrible last year, and they still shut the Auburn offense down. The Auburn offense hasn't gotten any better, so take Louisville at home, getting 3 points.
All right, I got to tell you, blood is thicker than water. I got to go with my son's recommendation on that. But quick question. He tells me, and he actually wants to go down and do a visit at Clemson only to go to a game and only to see the players come down that ramp at the beginning of the game. He says that's one of the most epic entrances in college football. True or false?
It is. And if you do make it to Clemson, you got to go to the Esso Club, and you do have to make it to Death Valley when it's not game time and go touch Howard's Rock before you run down the hill. And you got to try running down the hill. I've seen people roll down the hill because their feet were going too fast.
That's what I thought. Some of these big linemen, I was waiting for them to just bowl over a couple of the cornerbacks or something. All right, so those are my picks. We're going to find out how this goes, and I have to say, I do know a lot more about politics and culture than I do about college football, but that's the best I've got. That was actually a joint effort between Jason Randall and Richard Randall.
Well, you can hear Richard Randall every Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 10 on our sister station, not Extra Sports 1300. We're on Extra Sports 1300 on 740 KVOR. You'll hear me every now and then on the show as well because I'm pushing all the buttons, making it go. But Richard, thank you for joining us this morning.
Tim, I got to tell you, thank you so much for having me. You are the best producer I've ever had. You make that show. It's a joint effort. You're behind the scenes and on the microphone and making sure that everything is ticking there. If I'm the quarterback, you're the center and the offensive line, the running back and the wide receivers as well. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on the radio, 8:30 to Rush on Monday morning.
Coming up next, the other football show, Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden, going to tell you a little bit about soccer, and then we'll get into the football. But for now, class dismissed.